707, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots in their planes can have safer flights ahead. Well, hello there, Todd.
Hello there, John.
How are you today?
Well, I'm having an unusual day here in Northern California. It rained. It hasn't rained here in like 3 months or so, so I'm happy to see it.
Wow. Well, I haven't had that drought here in the East Coast. It's been nothing but rain.
Oh, my. Well, you don't have a wildfire risk like we do out here.
That's true. An interesting day for us today. You've called out an interesting accident. You know, boys will be boys, and we have a young CFI who definitely should not have the rating. And he may not. We haven't heard anything about any action the FAA may have taken against him. Well, it doesn't matter, does it? He died.
He died. And, you know, we'll get to that accident in great detail later because it really got our goats from several different directions. But before then, this morning I came across something that actually was good news from a pilot mental health perspective. That is, there's legislation coming from the House of Representatives going over to the Senate that's going to institute, or at least attempt to institute, changes that'll make it less onerous for people to deal with mental health issues and maintain their certification as pilots, and I believe also air traffic controllers. But before we get to all that good stuff, what I'd like to do is give a message out there to our potential sponsors. It's about our mission here at the Flight Safety Detectives. It's a simple one: to dig deep and to bring you the stories, lessons, and sometimes the hard truths that make aviation safer for everyone. And we're going to have several of those today, by the way. Because this work matters to us and to others around the world, we put in the hours and energy to bring you the insights you won't hear anywhere else. We aim to keep the conversation clear, honest, and independent. That's why we're seeking sponsors who share our commitment to this mission. If your company is connected to aviation, whether it's training, technology, services that help aviation professionals, we'd love to partner with you. When you sponsor the show, you're not just putting your name in front of our audience of engaged, safety-conscious listeners. You're supporting the work that helps keep aviation safer worldwide. To learn how to sponsor the Flight Safety Detectives, email us at fsdsponsors@gmail.com, and we'll work with you to make sure your message really lands. And one more thing. If you sponsor an episode, I will wear your hat.
You know, we know we've had an impact on the industry based on the emails that we get back. I mean, and it really covers the spectrum. I've mentioned this before, where we've actually had airline pilots email me about my comments at the end about doing a good walk around, paying attention to detail. At that level, to have a pilot come back and say, you know what, I changed the way I do things based upon what you guys are saying, that's a big deal. And I know the number of GA pilots, the list goes on and on. I mean, literally, we get a few hundred emails every month from people out there with various comments, and not a lot of hate mail, which is surprising, because in today's environment, it seems like a lot of people generate hate mail, or even worse. So it's kind of surprising that we haven't had very much of it all. In fact, I can't remember the last one. We have had a few. I just can't remember the last one. And we try to do the deep dive, try to go into the and find the little things that led up to the accident or helped it get as bad as it was.
And the two parts of the show we have today, both of them deal are related. I mean, one part is a news item I just came across this morning. The Mental Health Act and Aviation, excuse me, the Mental Health and Aviation Act of 2025, a bill that's been percolating in the U.S. Congress for years, was passed by the House and it's going to the Senate for further conference and possibly being made into law. Now, for those of you watching the video version of it, I have a graphic up that shows you a graphic design for kids, how a bill becomes law. And I use graphics like this because it's kind of confusing to me. You think, oh, if the House passes it, it's going to become law. Not really. Here's how it works. And John, you've been in the trenches in Washington, so you can definitely add some insights to this. A bill starts either from the executive branch, like the president, the House of Representatives, or the Senate. Some person in Congress has to suggests that this bill go forward, and either the House or the Senate comes up with a bill. If the House comes up with the bill, they send it to the Senate. The Senate comes up with the bill, they send it to the House. They get together, work out any differences, and if they both agree it should go forward, then they really get together and figure out what is the language going to be. Then it goes to the president, it'll either be signed or not signed. The president vetoes it, in most cases, it ends. Sometimes, if the House and Senate actually agree on something, they can get together and override a presidential veto. But this is not a controversial bill in that regard, in that mental health is an ongoing issue in aviation. Things are done that make it problematic for people to actually deal with their mental health issues and keep their certifications.
So the bill has been in the hopper, so to speak, for multiple years. Now, when a bill is introduced, if it has financial impact, it has to come from the House first. So the Senate can't introduce a bill that requires money first. The House has to. Now, they work in concert with one another. They have committees that meet with each other. So it's not like they're working in the dark. So the House has to introduce any bill that requires money to implement it. And that's why we get it bills that they never put any money on. And that agencies complain that the Congress says do this, do that, but there's no money attached to it. And that's the reason why it had its start in the Senate. So anyway, this bill has been hanging around for 6, 8, 10 years. I don't know how long. It goes back a ways. And it had no traction. I was told recently, based upon what Nathan Fielder had done with his rehearsal, that the number of calls that Congress received just flooded them for a while about the issue. And the committee moved it out. Once it got to the House floor, it gained some momentum and actually passed, as you said. So now it goes to the Senate. And the Senate will have a shot at it, and the Senate now can put whatever they want in there. If it differs from what the House passed, then it has to go to a conference committee where they work out their differences before it goes to the White House.
Before we go further, I'd like to make sure we have some clarification here. You mentioned Nathan Fielder and the rehearsal. Rehearsal was a short series on HBO which co-starred Mr. Golia as a star on HBO, and we're not going to go into the whole thing about how he was being chased by how should I say it, fans in the street. But we did do an earlier episode on this. Those of you watching the video, you're seeing a graphic to that episode. So if you go there, you'll get the full details as to why this particular series really got a whole different part of the population interested in the issues around mental health and aviation.
It certainly did that. It certainly did that. So there was enough interest to get the House spurred to move the bill on. So it came out of committee and went to the whole entire House. It passed the House after bouncing around a little bit. And now it's on the way to the Senate. So the White House has an office that's staffed by personnel actually on the Hill within the House and the Senate. So they've had their fingers in this themselves. I don't know to what level any input was received and handled. But the White House also knows what's going on. So I think that this is the best shot we have had in a long time to get some real meaningful change into the medical side of pilots and their mental health. And then there's a few other things too in there.
And there are several reasons why this is an issue. To make a long story short, there is a level of privacy when it comes to one's medical condition where your aviation medical examiner, even your employer, can't really get into your medical records. However, if you self-report having a condition and that condition happens to run afoul of you being able to fly, you could have your license pulled. You can be restricted from pursuing your career. So what you had was a situation where there was a lot of incentive for people to not report their medical condition, at least not to aviation medical examiners. And there's a whole list of, for example, medicines that are used to treat mental health conditions that are disqualifying for being a pilot or a air traffic controller. Now, some of these medications, from the medical side, there really isn't no real reason to do that to people. However, until the rules change, you can have regulations where the medications are allowing you to live a full life. Doesn't affect your job at all. But because it happens to be a regulation, and if you happen to take it, the end of story. So among other things, this bill will reclassify the medications that are allowed. It'll give additional authority to aviation medical examiners that are consistent with the changes, recommended changes in how this is going to come about. It will fund more aviation medical examiners, so there will be less of a delay in dealing with a person who has a mental health issue and has to be approved by the FAA. Now, how it will finally be approved, what will actually be in at the end, that remains to be seen. But for now, it's on its way. And those of you watching the video version of this, I'm flashing a summary of the legislation on the screen. And on our website, we're going to have links to not only the summary, but the entire bill itself. And the one thing I want to recommend to all of you, this is going to the Senate. Contact your senator. Tell them you're in favor of this bill. At least tell them that the flight safety detectives are in favor of this bill. What your opinion is up to you, but we are wholly and totally behind changing how mental health is currently treated for people who are certified to be controllers and pilots.
And there's others in the main, in the airline sector that needs to also benefit from this bill.
Would maintenance professionals also benefit from this?
Yes, engineering, management for the companies. The airline industry is just a snapshot of society as a whole. And you know what? We're all mental health issues seem to be popping up in every industry today.
If this opens up the conversation, allows it to be less of a stigma to talk about it, that's all for the good.
Yes.
We're going to take a short break now to meet one of Avemco's employees from their Frederick, Maryland office.
What's the best part of this job?
I would say just the amount of knowledge that I've been able to gather kind of about the GA industry in general. In the time that I've worked here, I feel like I've learned so much just from speaking with people on the phone. Doing my everyday tasks in my job, we were able to do a ground school with a local CFI, which was super insightful. We lectured about 9 hours. I felt like I've learned so much.
Have you had an opportunity to fly the simulator you have here in the office?
Yes, I flew. I want to say we did at least 2 hours, I think, and didn't crash. Did some successful takeoffs and landings.
That's a good
local pattern. So it was very cool to kind of get some insight into what our customers are doing, on a day-to-day basis, the training they're doing.
So with that knowledge, did that give you a better understanding when you're talking to a prospective client?
Absolutely.
What their needs are?
Yes. I feel a lot more confident speaking to people because I kind of understand where they're coming from, the types of aircraft they're discussing, the types of training that we're discussing in terms of, getting training discounts on there, asking, have you got your private certificate? Have you completed the ground school portion? What have you done? So that's been, I would say, very helpful.
And now, back to the flight safety detectives.
Okay, well, let's talk about this accident, which clearly has mental health issues woven into it.
Oh my, it's one of these situations where if even if you're not an aviation professional, if you read about what was done in this situation where an instructor was instructing a pilot who was a young person, 18-year-old pilot, getting his first license, getting his private pilot license. There's a requirement to do some night flying. He was doing this with a new instructor because his regular instructor was apparently colorblind, could not legally do the flight as an instructor. Before we get into it, let me give you the basics of what happened. This was a Piper Cherokee that had a fatal accident on September 27, 2023, in Whitesville, Kentucky. And the situation was this was an instructional flight. There was a CFI who was training a private pilot student for a night flight, for a night qualification. And this was a situation where normally it's a routine thing. I went through it. Anyone who gets even a basic license will have to go through this at some point. In my case, and many other cases, most people, the people who do most of their training is also the people who does the night training. But this was a case where his regular instructor could not do it because of a medical condition with his vision. How this new pilot, this new CFI got chosen, isn't made clear in the report. But what is clear is that this instructor was doing a lot of things that were, I'll be blunt, unprofessional at the very least. And I think, in my opinion, led to several kinds of distraction that led to this aircraft being destroyed. What kind of distraction are we talking about? This pilot was posting to Snapchat not once, but several times before and during the flight. This CFI was making comments about the student, posting those comments online, comments which were completely unprofessional, does not have a place in an instruction environment like this, and really calls into question the CFI's state of mind and decision making. I don't know if this CFI had an ongoing issue, medical or psychological or mental. I do know that this particular day, this was not something that would be acceptable in any flight department I know of that's training people, especially young people. John, I want you to comment on this. He made a comment about the pre-flight that the student was doing. And for those of you watching the video version of this, I will be putting the screenshot of what he put online. I'll literally read what's on the page here, even if there's some grammatical errors in there. Has a picture of the plane apparently during the pre-flight, and the caption was, "Me and the student would not get along if he was my full-time student. I've seen faster at the Special Olympics," implying faster time to get something done. Now, first off, I'll skip the statements about people with mental health issues, but I will say this. John, you can please chime in. How long should it take for you to do a pre-flight?
As long as it takes to satisfy your questions and concerns. All right, there is no time limit on it. You need to look at everything. I mean, we've had enough emails from students that have written to me, because I say that at the end of every single show, about how they found different items on their walk around. Some of them, the airplane was just walked around by somebody else, and indicating a that they missed it, the previous student or pilot missed it. But they, because they were detailed, found it. And that's exactly what you want to have. You want to make sure you look at all your flight controls, all the attachment points that you can see. I tell everybody, touch your damn airplane, wiggle everything, because you won't just see it looking at it. Sometimes just grabbing an aileron and giving it a little up and down motion. After a while, you might find one that goes a lot up and down, and you say, "Whoa, let's find out why this is going on." Or the rudder, it might be moving for much more than it should be. There's all sorts of things you should look at. I especially see it on low-wing airplanes. They don't go underneath to look at the landing gear. That is, I can't. The vast majority don't get down on their hands and knees to take a look. Right? And that's not a good pre-flight. That's not a good pre-flight. So it just You know, you need to do what you have to do to make sure that airplane is airworthy. At that point, the responsibility for an airworthy airplane is on the pilot, not on maintenance.
At the very least, if, in my opinion, if I were running an organization that had instructors and this instructor was acting like this, I would personally take that instructor off instructing duty and make sure this person gets additional training or counseling or whatever to not do things like what was done by this instructor. And I'll read the second and last Snapchat image that he uploaded before the flight. And again, I'm quoting directly from what was uploaded by the CFI. I don't have to be up at 4:30 a.m. tomorrow or nothing. Let's take our sweet-ass time and have a conversation instead of getting this three-hour flight done. Now, two or three things here. This was apparently posted at 8:39 p.m., and 4:30 a.m. would have been approximately 7 hours later. So assuming that the flight would have taken roughly 3 hours, literally this CFI was in a situation where he had to get up roughly 4 or 5 hours after the airplane lands, and assuming it takes some time to park the airplane, debrief the student, and go back home, this person might have very, very few hours before he has to wake up. I don't know if he was going to fly a plane the next day or whatever, but this is a planning issue, in my opinion, on the CFI's part. If you are pressed for time and you have a student who's learning, you should not press that student for time. You should do it on, well, he should have not let his lack of time management affect how he is instructing the student.
Well spoken. Well spoken. I mean, the student's there to learn, and they mirror oftentimes what their instructors do. So this instructor was giving him firsthand experience with what not to do. It's just crazy. So chiding him because it's taken too long to do a brief flight, that's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. And pre-flight is done with detail, not once over lightly. You know, and then to make fun of him for it, to make fun of him for other things that he's doing while he's flying is really beyond the pale. I would have been firmer, Todd. If I own this flight department and I found out what he was doing, because I'm sure this wasn't the first time, he would have been just fired. Never mind additional training. I would just throw his ass out. And I would notify the FAA why I threw him out.
Now, this is an issue. Well, like you just said, if you own the flight department, he's gone. What if you're the student? What if you are a person who is paying good money? This is an 18-year-old student, straight out of high school, working hard to put the dollars together to make this happen. And probably every flight is precious. Every dollar is precious. He's probably working like a dog to make this happen. Any opportunity to fly is not something you want to waste. Now, I can sit here as a student working on my instrument rating and say, you know what? If this flight isn't working out for me, even if it costs me a few hundred bucks to cancel it, I'm going to cancel it. Because, you know what? I can always find a new another $300 or $400 or $500 or whatever the case is. I'm not going to find another me. I'm not going to find another life if I do something that puts me at risk. But an 18-year-old who is working on getting the first rung on the career is in a bit of a bad situation with respect to they have pressures as well. But what's my advice to what to do in this situation? You know, my advice is sometimes you have to look at the situation and say, today I'm not going to fly. The airplane is broken, or I'm not feeling up to it, or the situation isn't to my liking, or there are other circumstances that make it too risky or too stressful to go up in the air. Now, one of the situations that happened was that there was actually a convective SIGMET for the area, which means there was a forecast of significant weather. Severe thunderstorms, cloud tops up to 42,000 feet, hail of 1.25 inches in diameter. Again, you don't have to be a weather expert or a senior pilot to understand that thunderstorms are not a good thing. Convective activity is not a good thing. If you're in a light aircraft, like a Cherokee, that doesn't have anti-icing or de-icing equipment, it's not a good thing to be around severe storms. And one of the issues, on top of the CFI issues, was that they're trying to accomplish this flight in an area of heavy weather. And although the flight instructor did have a graphic available in the cockpit that showed him where the weather was, one of the things about that is that whatever you're being displayed on these kinds of devices is somewhat delayed. That is, the reality of the situation is not what your screen is showing. It's showing you something that is at some point in the past. And even if that delay is 5 or 10 minutes, when you have storms that could be moving 20, 30 knots, 5 or 10 minutes could be very, very significant difference. Also, with severe thunderstorms, you can have effects, be it winds, hail being thrown out from the top of the thunderstorm, that could extend miles beyond the what you see on the screen. You're just seeing on the radar the thickest part of the storm, the part that has the most water, etc. in it. You're not seeing all the hail that's being thrown out the top. You're not seeing the lightning that might be hitting miles away from the thundercloud. You're not seeing the winds that are rolling around the ground and possibly affecting you even if you're at some altitude on the way in for a landing, which this person was, or the instructor was shooting an instrument approach to get to the airport. And given all this, it's a situation where the CFI actually had information about the weather. The CFI was actually in contact with air traffic control. This is an area of the country where there are other airports, and you can see from the graphic, for those of you watching the video, there are other airports that are in the vicinity of the flight path, the final few minutes of this aircraft's flight. I don't know if those other airports would have had either RNAV or ILS type of landing systems, but there are alternatives. This CFI decided to press on. So the result, unfortunately, there was an in-flight breakup of the aircraft, and both the instructor and the student were killed. And it didn't have to happen for a whole bunch of reasons. And if nothing else, if the only thing that happened was they flew into the weather, I wouldn't be putting the blame on the CFI as much. But given you had a persistent lack of professionalism, a persistent inattention to the actual task at hand, sending stuff to Snapchat as opposed to instructing the student, I can't help but think that this CFI did not have a full picture of what was going on around him, his student, and the aircraft.
He didn't have the maturity to be an instructor pilot. You know, that's part of it. This one has a long chain of events into the accident, most of which swirl around the CFI. It's a tragedy. We lose an 18-year-old kid with a promising career in front of him because of a 22-year-old that hasn't grown up. Is that what we're facing now today with the current shortage of instructor pilots? You know, we're hurting. Every piece of aviation is hurting for people. And does that mean we're scraping too low? I don't know.
No matter what the economy is like, whether it's a great economy or a bad economy, there is no perfect combination of people who are working in aviation at any given time. You can have an organization that has top-notch CFIs for the most part. But like any other organization, it's never going to be 100%. There will always be someone, even an excellent CFI, who's having a bad day. And for all we know, this person had an extremely bad day, had never acted like this before, and probably would not have acted like this again had he not been killed in this accident. But it doesn't matter. If you're in that situation, as a pilot, as a student, as a FBO operator, if you see something that doesn't make sense, if you see something that is an issue, if you see something that could potentially lead to an accident or an incident, you got to step up and do something. Even if that doing something means you're walking away from a situation. The CFI could have walked away. CFI with, you know, a little bit of self-awareness might have said, you know what? My head's not in the game today. You know, kid, I'm sorry. I know you've taken a lot out of your day to do this, and this might cost you some dollars, but I'm stepping away because I don't want to put you at risk. He could have done all the other things that we were shaking our fingers at. If he had done that, I'd forgive him.
Let's hope that nobody listening to the show will get into that same boat. And those students that are listening to us, speak up. If you see something stupid going on, speak up. Don't be afraid. That's a part of a, you know, we've had a number of airline crashes because the first officers wouldn't speak up to the captain. Same situation here. Don't let that happen. If it's not right, raise the issue. If it continues, let's end the flight.
I forgot to tell you this was going to be my second to last word that I just said. So that was the second to last word. But before we go to the last word, I want to ask a favor of all of you who are watching us on YouTube. If you like our videos and want to support the channel, consider joining as a YouTube member. Member gets to get special perks like exclusive badges and early access to content. Just hit the join button below this video and check it out. And with that, John, the last word is yours.
And I will do what I always do, because we still have a lot of accidents in this area, including the one we just talked about. If you're going to go flying, do a good job of planning your flight. Plan at home, hotel room, wherever. Do it again at the airport. Don't do what these individuals did. Take off with a lot of conductive activity all around. When you get out to your airplane, do a good pre-flight. Again, don't do what these two guys did. We had a student who was doing a very thorough pre-flight and an instructor pilot complaining that he's taking too long. A walk around takes whatever it's going to take. Right? So let them go do it, run it themselves at whatever speed that they want. When you get in the airplane, pay attention inside your airplane. Make sure all your switches are where they need to be. Everything's not the way it's supposed to be. When you get off the ground and into the air, make sure you look and put that head of yours on the swivel. But look around, because there are a lot of airplanes out there today, a lot of students in the air. Don't become an accident around the airport because you ran into another airplane. And we have a number of those. And we even have them now with drones. So we're having a lot of issues, some brand new, some of them have been around since we've been flying. So don't become a statistic. Put that head on your shoulders to good use. And put your training to good use. Please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetothetexans@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
Whether you're a student pilot, CFI, borrowing or building an airplane, or looking to buy, Avemco Insurance Company can help you find the right insurance coverage based on what you fly and how you fly it. No gotchas. No runaround. No confusing language. No middlemen. Avemco Insurance Company values safety and is a proud sponsor of the Flight Safety Detectives podcast. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety today. Earn an automatic 5% off by mentioning you're a Flight Safety Detectives listener.